Welcome to the Action Sports Podcast. We created this podcast to help you become sponsorable by learning from the athletes, brands, and those that are crushing it in action sports. So crank up the volume and get inspired to turn your passion of riding into your career.
What is up, action sports enthusiasts? If you have not already joined the Action Sports Club, head over to ascarmy.com/podcast so you can get your club invite and start learning how you can land sponsorships and spend way more time riding. Again, that is ascarmy.com/podcast. See you in there. All right, dude. Chris Kaltenbacher. It was cool that you reached out to me the other day and you're like, Colton, we need to do another podcast, because I'm always open to do podcasts with great guys, people that are of influence, and they have more knowledge and more time to share. So that's why I was like, yes, Smasher, let's do it. Let's hang out. Let's make this reality. And because you were, like we were just talking about, the fact that you had this cool experience that now is going to become your future job, right? You're going to tour the world doing it. Everybody's going to know Chris Kaltenbacher in every school district in the nation. The greatest.
I don't know about the greatest. Let's don't put that in there. I might get headhunted. You and I both might get headhunted out for that.
The guy from Boondockers, great snowmobiler, but more of like an individual that somebody can look up to and say, I want to be like Chris one day. Like, there's a lot of cool athletes out there. There's a lot of cool athletes. And there's, I think, though, when you have find somebody that's on a caliber like you, Chris, where you're a hardworking man, you're giving back to the community, you are pushing the envelope in your riding skills, it's somebody that a lot of kids growing up should look towards and want to, I guess, replicate, mimic, a copy, whatever you want to call it, because you, my friend, are the reason why our industry can grow and our industry can actually be amazing and share it with such great people. So of course I'm going to have you back on the podcast and hang out again.
I appreciate it.
So let's, I think I want to start off with that. Let's start off with your experience that you just had, where you were at and why. Like, I really want to know the why behind it all, why they wanted you out of everybody that they could have asked to come back to or come to Alaska to speak. Some awesome dude out of or near the Sierra Nevada mountains out of Reno to fly up to Alaska and come chat. So what was that like, and why did they want you?
So well, I grew up in Dillingham, Alaska. It's a town of like 2,500, 3,000 people. I grew up there through my sixth grade, through my senior year, graduated from there, and then went back all the way until 98, I believe, was my last year there. And I went back there for summers, winters, and Thanksgivings to work at the local fuel, at the fuel company there, Bristol Fuels. And I'd go back there and work. And so I'd make money. And that's what I would do. And a guy named Bert Luckers, which was much younger than me. And I actually had another buddy that was Eli Livermont that was a year younger than me. And they had been asking me to come up there and, you know, speak to the kids about growing up in the bush. And they were saying, make it out of the bush, or, you know, just to, you know, it's hard to put in perspective, you know, being in the bush out there, to look on, be there and to look on the outside. It just seems so far-fetched. It doesn't seem real. It feels so much to grasp to fly out of Dillingham, to go to Anchorage, and then to fly to the United States or the lower 48, excuse me. You know, it's just such a hard thing to grasp as a kid. You just don't understand it. It's just very hard. So for me to grow up there and to come back and speak to the kids, it was very influential for the kids to see that, to understand that, you know, dreams, whatever they are, you know, it can happen. And so Bert Luckers, his wife, or I worked with her dad, and Bert had been watching some stuff and found out I was from Dillingham and decided to ask his wife, hey, you think if I ask Chris Kaltenbacher to come back and speak to the kids of Dillingham High School, if he'd do it? And she was like, send him a message. Sent me a Facebook message, and I was like, absolutely, I'd come home. So he got a hold of numerous of people. I mean, there are tons of companies and stuff in town, and they all pitched in to give me mileage, along with I invited a couple of people and they couldn't make it. So I got a hold of Ben Burke. Ben Burke was like, I'm in. Like, he was kind of my cameraman, and you know, he was kind of documenting the whole thing. But anyways, they paid for our way up there. The Bristol Inn hotel up there gave us a place to stay. Basically, we just had to pay for fuel and came up, and it turned into something way bigger than I ever thought it was. I thought it was going to be kind of, you know, like a, you know, like a 45, 50 minute speech, you know, blah, blah, blah. They wanted me to kind of talk about drugs and alcohol because my mother was killed by a drunk driver almost 5 years ago. So they thought, you know, that would be a good impact. And it's something for them to understand. And drugs and alcohol are kind of a big thing in the bush community. I mean, there's not a whole lot to do if you're not into outdoors, or, you know, a lot of the kids are into fishing and so on and so forth. So it was very cool. And that's kind of, that's, so to answer your question, that's how it all happened. That's how it just, a guy up there just had a dream and he pursued it. And I sure, I'll do whatever I can to make it up there. Took time off work and bam, dude, there it was.
Why was it important for you though, to talk to younger people? You talked a little bit about, like, you know, trying to help them. So I, maybe is it coming from the fact that your mother, you know, rest her soul, had or passed away because of that, and like, this is something that was really personal to you, and so that's why you wanted to maybe be a beacon? Like, why would you, why would Chris want to go do that though?
Man, it's just somewhere, Colton, Dillingham is just somewhere I grew up, and to see with some of my friends, I've lost friends to drinking and you know, passing away and drugs, and just what things do to you. And my dad had always taught me respect everybody's culture and the native culture. And so for them to ask me to come back and talk to the kids, it was just, it was my way to give back to a community that had raised me. There's so many of my dad's friends there that, you know, Dillingham was just a big part in me growing up, that made me tougher, that made me understand, you know, the laws of the, of Mother Nature, to respect Mother Nature, to give back to the land, you know, and so to go and give back for me. And Dillingham is a community that is, like, I can't do it with both hands, but if you put both your hands together and lock it together, it's a very tight community. Everybody is intertwined some way, you know, they're related some way. So as a white man to go to a native village where, you know, native is the major population of that town, and to be accepted into that was extremely respectful and heartwarming to me. It meant so much to me. So for them to invite me back was very just showing respect. And so for me to turn that down, which I would never have, I mean, I was so excited to go back and see friends and basically family, you know, to go back. So that was, I just wanted to give back. I was giving back and hope that kids understand that, man, I'm not the best rider by far, hands down. I'm not, you know, I just followed a dream and my dream turned into reality. And so these kids, if they can have a dream and they can follow it, you know, maybe they could be the next person that comes out and be the next Chris Kaltenbacher, you know, and they follow a dream and it changes someone else's life. Maybe they save someone else's life or someone else's mom, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, you know, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that's what I hope.
I think you just touched on something that's key. When we're in our own realm and like creating content for social media, you know, for companies, especially with sponsorships and stuff like that, I think we get hung up so much on the outreach to a million people. It's like, I want to talk to a million people. I want to be the guy showing up on a million people's pages and stuff like that. But to the point that if you can change one person's life, just one, like, it's incredible. I think it's one of the neatest things you could ever experience is changing one person's life.
Correct. And I said that to the kids. I said that to the kids. I said, if you remember anything about me, one thing is remember that my mother was killed by a drunk driver. So if you can stop one person from going through the pain that my wife, that me, my brother, my aunt, my kids went through, if you can stop just one person, I mean, you've done something great. I mean, you're not going to stop it. It's inevitable. Something's going to happen. But if there's one kid that's out there and they're, you know, having a drink and they're like, hey, drive me home. And they're like, you know what? I remember this guy coming to my high school when I was a freshman or a junior or senior. And he talked and I could see the pain in his, I can't do it. And they stop someone else. You know, that's where it starts. I mean, it's a big hope, but that's what I was. And what was crazy, I mean, we're kind of skipping forward, but when I was giving the speech, man, the kids were so in tune. Like I was looking around, there was only two kids that were really kind of not paying attention, but everybody else, like the main guys that were big snowmobilers, they were staring at me and looking. It was, it's giving me goosebumps. It was really cool, man. It really was. So I'm hoping that I touch somebody and they'll remember that for the rest of their life. That's all I wanted.
Yeah. Dude, that's incredible. I'm pumped that you got to do that. When you sent me the message saying, dude, I'm going to go do this, I was so pumped. I was so ecstatic for you. I was like, this is such a good opportunity for somebody. Because I'll be honest with you, Chris, it's actually something I've always wanted to do. Like, I grew up in a town not quite as small, just a little bit bigger in Utah. And I've thought for years, I was like, you know, if I did something with my life where I could change somebody else's life, you know, just touch somebody's life and go back to, you know, not maybe necessarily my high school, but go to a high school and actually talk about it and get up on stage and actually show something that's a reality and give kids hope that you don't have to live this box, you know, mentality that correct. You can't correct. Break out of that mold that we go through in high school and in middle school. And I don't necessarily blame the teachers for it because they have to abide by rules and curriculums and stuff like that. But it's just a shame that we can't see outside of the box while we're going through that kind of program, and we have to experience it when we're out and we're actually trying to figure out life, you know, it's something that I thought would be so neat, and to see you do it and accomplish that, I was like, yeah, dude, good for you. Good for you. Super. I was super pumped about it.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it was cool, man.
Oh man. I love it.
Surreal.
Why do you think that your life has literally turned out in such a way for you to actually go do that?
Without getting really sentimental and all religious on you. I don't know. I was never, you know, I'm just, I don't know. I honestly think, you know, losing my mom, she was having some health problems. So in a way I kind of wonder if this was a plan that maybe, you know, her passing away and it being so just for my life, you know, not having my mom in my life, my mom and dad being divorced, my mom and I going through stuff. And then the end of her life, we really got connected. And then for me to lose her the way I did, and being such a sensitive, compassionate guy, I would say sometimes that maybe that pushed me so that I was able to go to Alaska. Maybe I'm saving someone's life. You know, I have no idea without getting, you know, like, crazy about it, but I wonder if me losing her, you know, I would look at kids, and one of the kids, which is funny, is that I picked out of the crowd that was kind of goofing around, and I made him come down and put on the Abby pack. A couple of my old friends, classmates, said you could not have picked a better kid out of all the kids in the crowd, because this poor kid has been through a lot. So to make him feel special was like, you know, a hammer hitting the nail. I mean, I couldn't have picked it, and I had no idea. Like, I just picked him out of the crowd. I happened to pick on another girl and say something to her. But the two people out of anybody, I guess, two kids that I should have picked on, I got. So, you know, it makes me wonder, like, maybe, you know, as stupid as it sounds or whatever, maybe that was the reason. I don't know, man. But it just seems all weird the way that this is all playing out. Like, it's kind of scary to me. Like, I'm hoping that, you know, this isn't like the end, like I've done my duty and now it's time for me to go. that's what I'm hoping. But, you know, and by doing this, I had another girl that I went to high school with, and her brother, well, their youngest sister lives in Nome, and she contacted me and she wanted to know if I'd come to Nome and speak to the kids up there.
No way.
And I swear to God, swear to God. And so I said, absolutely. And she goes, okay, we'll work on it.
I told you.
So
told you guys are touring the U.S. You're touring the world.
So, I mean, if I can help people and save people that they never have to go through what I went through, man, I'm all for it, because no one ever wants to go through this pain, you know, and the kids of Alaska, like, you ever want to test your ability as a man, as a woman, to think that you can live in this type of environment, move to the bush. I dare you. Like, it's a different life. You just can't put it into reality, like how tough this really is.
I've heard multiple times, like, it's kind of funny too, like down here in the lower 48, whenever we see glamorous videos and pictures of Alaska, we're like, oh, Alaska is so beautiful and so amazing, and why wouldn't anybody want to go up there? But then you do hear stories of, well, it's dark for, you know, multiple months out of the year, and alcohol and drugs are rampant because of depression, and there's a whole mixture. It's a big bag of scariness, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah. And just, you know, like, I have friends that, you know, some of the girls I went to high school with, you know, this past week, they're like, oh, another snowstorm. We're sick of snow. And I'm like, send it this way. You know, they're just,
you're right.
They are to their wit's end. And when I went home, you know, it was icy and snowy and blowing and cold. And I was like, this is home. Like, I'm home. Like, I'm happy. And they're like, you can have it. Like, we're so done. We don't want anything. So today, one of the ladies texted me and said, it's like spring-like conditions. We're all so happy. Now we have to go through breakup. And, you know, they have, this has been a record snowfall for them up there. So it's ridiculous, you know, but yeah, I mean, to not be able to get, you know, good produce, good meat, the prices up there. Oh my Lord. I mean, but you look at it, you know, I grew up there all those years, and I was with Ben, and I was sitting in the hotel room with him, and I looked out the window and I was facing the mountains, and I was like, God, all my years of living here, I never understood the beauty of it. And now going home, like, it gives me goosebumps. Like, I'm looking at my arm. It's just the most magnificent place. Like, there's no boundaries. Like, you're like, oh, I want to go to that bowl. Oh, let's go over there. Oh, look at that bowl. Let's go over there. Oh, well, can we go over there? Yeah. They're like, what do you mean, can we go over there? This is ours. We just go. So it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have heard and seen many videos that it's like, it's just unheard of. It's just unreal. The terrain up there. And it's, I think BC is probably, like, BC mm-hmm. and Alaska, I mean, they like share that same range, right? Like, so, yeah. So similar in riding and the mountain stuff. And so, like, I know we just went through this really fun, awesome adventure you went through, and people are probably like, all right. Like, how does this tie into sponsorships and all of what the action sports are actually about? And how it ties in is the opportunities that you get for working with companies, being a sponsored athlete, being an individual that you can actually help other people is such, like, you have to be a good caliber individual to actually make that a reality. And so without Chris's footwork that he has been putting in year after year after year with sledding, would never have landed this opportunity for him. So that's why we get into sponsorship, so we can bring more exposure to our industry and show that this industry can actually make an impact, and a good impact. There's a lot of negativity out there on the other side of things, but they focus on the negative things. They don't focus on what it can do and what it has done. I mean, and we focus on the negative things about them too. So, correct. Kind of both ways, but that's what's so great about our industry. We just love the passion that people have. So the fact that we can accomplish something like that because of the sponsorships we land makes total sense to actually make a deal or create that relationship like you have with Vogue, with SLP, with your, all of them, right? Every sponsor, mm-hmm. Zollinger's or Zebros, like, everybody. And so, touching on the snow that we talked about a second ago, and how when you left there, you were in heaven. this year has probably been one of the record worst years for writing. And the craziest thing is when it wasn't really any good at the beginning, like the very, very beginning, it was, oh man, this isn't so good. And then it was crazy amazing. Like dumped and dumped and dumped. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be the best year ever. Everybody was saying it. I was so mad that I was out here in the East. I was like, why? Why did I come this year? Oh, I was so upset. But then the year kind of ended after that. So
it was over. It was over.
So what did you have to actually do to make up for the lack of snow? What were you doing this whole season?
Man, this is, out of all my years of writing, out of all my years in history, this is the worst season of my life. I traveled, I rode here in Cali, Nevada, 3 days. 3 days is I rode. And that was when I first got my sled from Boak. I rode 2 days back to back. And then after that, I didn't ride again. And then the last day was this last Saturday. And it was spring like conditions. It was garbage. You know, it was, all the creeks are open, all the rivers are open. It's slush, you know, it's to where, you know, it's heavy slush. So your sled's not really, you know, it's when you're climbing. So I traveled as much as I could, you know, and this is the first time since I started with Boondockers. I never made it to Utah. I didn't go to Utah one time. This is the first time in, I don't know, 16, 17 years. I didn't go to Utah one time.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I went to Colorado, I went to McCall, and I went to Stanley, and that's where I rode. That's where I rode all season.
Oh my gosh. And that's because you were chasing the snow?
Just chasing the snow. Utah never really got a base. Every time I go to Utah, it seems like I break something. You know, Utah doesn't seem to get a base, and Utah's just, it's just got it out for me. So I always break something. So they had good snow, but it just wasn't enough. So I just didn't go. I tried to make it to Colorado a couple of times and it just never worked out. Eric was on vacation or, you know, snow wasn't good. So I missed that. But so Stanley and McCall were the places I rode the most, but it was a trying winter and it really is very sad. And then Alaska, of course, I mean, you know, so that's where that ended up.
Right. I mean, you spent a little bit of time in riding up there, didn't you? Just a little bit.
Oh yeah. We rode up there 3 days and, the snow up there wasn't terrific, but the first day I went out with some, you know, with like 30 kids, they all skipped school. I'm up there preaching how you should stay in school and, you know, all the parents let their kids have it off. So we rode half a day on Friday, which was awesome. I mean, I could go on for days about these little kids, but you know, whatever, 12 was the youngest all the way up to 17 and we're 40 miles from nowhere. And these kids are out there just ripping around, going balls to the wall. And, they were hitting a jump and they're like, hey, will you come jump with us? I was like, sure, why not? You know, when I was riding a XC, what was that? XC 800 or XCR 800. And I hit it the first time and it was like jumping on asphalt. And I was like, oh, that hurts. So I was like, well, I'll just go bigger one more time. And when I landed, man, my right hip hurt, my neck hurt, my shoulder hurt. And I told the kids, I was like, man, I'm done. I don't know how you guys are doing that. And their necks were snapping and they were just straight sending it. And it made me realize that, you know, that's how I grew up. You know, I was on a Bravo or a 340 Enticer or something. You just send it. That's just what you knew. So it didn't matter. But so anyways, yeah, the snow up there. But yeah, we rode 3 days and the snow wasn't epic. But man, you could cover some territory. Holy smacks.
You just book it down the trails and you guys can make it wherever you wanted.
Just going, you know, you're doing 65, 70, 80 miles an hour just across these flats and, you know, just getting up into the mountains. And I was with one of my buddies and Ben and then 12-year-old, 15-year-old and a 16-year-old. And we kind of lost the other group. They missed us and went a different way. We waited for them, but they went a different way and never caught up. So all of us went up and it was like, I was like a little kid in a candy shop. I was like, ooh, look at that bowl. Let's go to that bowl. Let's go to that bowl. You know, it was just incredible. So, but once you got higher up into the elevations, you know, into these bowls, the snow was much better, but you know, riding that XC, you know, 800 with an inch and 3/4 inch track, it didn't climb, but you punched it and at sea level. I think I looked at my Garmin one time and I was at like 17 feet above sea level, man. They ripped. It was unreal. skis were off the ground the whole time. You could hold it wide open across the lake. And it would just, you know, you're giggling like, holy cow.
Interesting. You know, going up, I guess, because speaking of sea level, and you guys aren't quite, I don't know, maybe because I haven't been up in that area, but I would assume it's not quite like snow conditions or mountainous like Valdez, right? There's mountains, but it's not quite the same.
It is if you go further back.
Okay.
And you go back in. Yeah, it is. There's some big mountains. If you look back at the Tikchik Mountains, and you look up like the McClung Hills and up around Snake Lake and stuff like that. Yeah, it gets big. But right there in Dillingham, no, you're right on the coast. So, you know, it'll dump one day, and then it seemed that, you know, it would start to rain. But the farther you go back in, the deeper the snow gets.
Okay. Got it. Cool. Yeah, just kind of was curious about that, because like when you said XCR, I was like, did they even bring the XCR back again? Because I remember old XCR trailing arm sleds, and how just trailing arm sleds are horrible. So I can understand the whiplash and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, they were riding, you know, like one kid was on an 850 E-Tech, and man, I was doing everything I could to catch this little guy. He was 13 years old. And when I looked down, it said on the speedometer, it said 96 miles per hour. So that's track speed. But this kid was moving, and it took me, I posted it on Facebook and Instagram, but it took everything I could to catch this little guy. And at one point I look over at him, and he's wheeling, like he's on the gas, and he's 13 years old.
He's like, just you're studs. Like, I know what that's like.
Oh yeah, dude. Just like, very familiar. I was riding a Bravo. Yeah. I was just riding a Bravo, hold it wide open everywhere I went.
Dude, that's funny. Coming back down to the States for the season, chasing the snow, not wanting to go to Utah because you don't want your sled destroyed. How was filming?
Ooh, it was tough. It was tough this year. It was really tough. There's just nobody seemed to travel as a group this year, really a whole lot. Just chasing the snow. I got COVID for like 11 days. I missed a trip with Matt Ants. I missed a trip to Stanley, me, Dan, Anthony, Fatty. I think we all bailed. It was a tough season. Nick bailed. I think I made a couple of trips with Nick up to Stanley to get some footage. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting film this year. I'm hoping that Nick has enough footage to put it together.
Yeah, because that's been kind of well, as most people know you, like they know you because of the films. I mean, heck, what was I looking at? I was just looking at one of your, I'll show you my screen. I was looking at one of your videos in here. So the interesting thing, and this doesn't really tell you or give you a exact analytics. You have 6,900 followers, which you've gone up since last time we had you on the podcast. But you had a video in here that I'm pretty sure was close to, so that one right there, 7,600.
Yep.
What was it? Dude, oh, right here. There you go. 56,000 views. The thing is, I probably got like half of those because when I was just waiting for your dial up to work, I was like, I turned that video on and it just kept repeating. It just kept playing in the background as a repeat. And I was like, just some of the commentary you had in that video, I was like, oh man, I don't think my wife should hear this because you're like, we're going to bang her. And I was like, after you getting everything set up, right?
Yeah, that was
bring your heart out there.
Yeah, I can't believe that video blew up of all the videos I post, and that one blows up. But yeah, like go figure.
Yeah, so I was just like, it was just interesting to go through these and see the amount of views that you can get inside of a video, without having the like that many followers. It's just interesting how social media will kind of do that. It'll take your content and just explode it. You get people sharing it, and maybe that's exactly what it was. There's just all those individuals that just love it when you just rev a sled over and over and over. And so people just share the crap out of it because they love the sound. I think
that was the first sled with the SLP twins with the Matrix Slash with the first set of SLP twins on it, you know, and
that could be it too.
Even just looking at you scrolling through there, I just don't post enough I really need to post more to get more followers. I just don't do it enough and I need to, you know, I run out of content and then, you know, you keep posting it over and over and people either really like it or they get bored with it. And I don't want people to get bored. You know, I'm trying to stay as genuine as I can and as legit as I can. I don't want people to be like, oh, he's just posting about this or he's just bragging about that. You know, I don't want to be that. I don't want to go that way with my stuff.
How many people do you think actually do that?
Oh, I don't want to get,
we're not going to point fingers at anybody, but just like how many accounts do you follow that you kind of feel that way about?
Oh, there's people out there that do it, but you know, like I look at it and maybe that's what their passion is. You know, I just talked to the kids in Alaska about, you know, don't judge people by what they do. Maybe that's what they're into. Just because a kid wears Converse shoes and isn't wearing Jordan shoes doesn't make him a bad person. Maybe that's what he's into. So, you know, that's what someone's into, you know, hey, you know, good for them. Maybe that's their passion. That's what they want to do. And that's fine by me. I'm good with it. You know, I just don't want to because, you know, like Climb, SOP, Vogue, Starting Line, Ice Age, you know, Sled Solutions, Arctic FX, Truck Boss, these people give me stuff and they want me to promote it. But if I just keep saying, oh, SOP, they're eventually going to go, he's just blowing them up because they give him free stuff. I don't want people to think that. Like I run people's stuff for a reason, not because it's free, but because I really truly do believe in their product. Like I do, I've used, all these products for a number of years now. And I really do believe in it. Like I would not promote someone if it wasn't a good product. Cause I don't want, you know, poor Sally out there to go and go, oh yeah, well, Smasher said that this is a good product. And then they run it and they're like, well, this isn't any good. Now I've just took poor Sally that saved up for 2 years to go out and buy something. And now it's not what she expected. You know, that's not cool. I mean, that could be me. That used to be me, you know, buying from the, what was it? Dennis Kirk catalog. I would see something.
That's right. We talked about that.
I would order some from the Dennis Kirk catalog because, you know, I don't know, Jeremy McGrath would run it or something, you know, or someone on the East Coast was running on their sled or their snowmobile and it was garbage, you know? So I didn't want some kid to do that.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's really interesting in our realm. And I find this because I've had this conversation with actually more than one person on the podcast about how often should I be posting? What kind of content should I be posting? And inside the Action Sports Club, we have a course called the Acceleration Program where there's a lot of high level learning that goes into this kind of content, this kind of exercises. And some of the people that we talk to have that question, have that hump. They're like, well, I just don't want to post just to post. Like, that's not what I'm here for. I don't just want to do that.
Right.
And we get that. Like it doesn't make sense to just post because you have to. When you get to a point though, where you are so passionate about what you do, it's like our perspective is, it's like, why wouldn't you post so much? Why wouldn't you throw this stuff out there and saying how much you love this stuff and how much you care about these brands and how much these relationships makes, like how important they are to you? Because I'll be honest with you, Chris, and I'm not calling you out on anything. I'm just a perspective, right? When your mother passed away, and I've gone through your feed, when your mother passed away, it was mom, 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 like consistently mom, mom, mom. And then even through the years when, even took more recently when the individual, you know, the whole court case and everything with him, right?
You're good.
Mm-hmm. Bam, bam, bam. You're like mom, 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 mom. It was so near and dear to you that it was important for you to share your, like what's going on in your life. Right. And we honestly feel that manufacturers and relationships that we build with these companies, they don't want the people to post so much just because they have to. They don't like that. They don't want people forced to post just because they're sponsored athletes. But when they get somebody like you, Chris, where you are a diehard Voke fan, a diehard Starting Line fan, Boondockers, everything, like, you eat, sleep, and breathe these companies, these relationships, sledding, you know, it makes sense for those that have the content to post consistently, right? Get the content and do it consistently. So if that means, like, let's talk about Muskoka Freeride. The dude's really good with posting daily, and his YouTube channel is blown up, and he does it. I haven't had on the podcast, so I can't say why he does it, because I don't know yet. He's going to be a guest. My perspective, though, is he is passionate, just to your point that you made. He's passionate about posting often. He's passionate about taking the time to do this. And I do find it can be a difficult thing where if you're not used to doing it consistently and you're more interested in what you can provide on a high level, and you feel that each post that you put out there is that high level, then it works, right? And we had this conversation with Cian, right? Where it's like, I posted this one post and I thought it was going to get 500,000 views and it bombed. And then I post this crap video and it 500,000 views. It's 57,000, right?
Yeah.
It's social media, learning the game, or not learning the game, but learning how to use social media, leveraging it for your benefit of becoming a sponsored athlete. It takes time and it takes skill, and it's something you learn over time. It does.
You're absolutely right. You know what? Someone told me, I'm not going to call this person out, but he made a very interesting point to me that, you know, I may only have 6,900 followers, where someone may have, you know, 80,000 followers, but sometimes the content that I'm posting is reaching more people because it's not just always so much. I'm not talking bad about anyone. I'm just saying that's just what someone told me, because I was talking to them about my value. You know, what's my value to your company? And that's what he was saying, is your value is maybe you only have 6,900 or, you know, 7,000 followers, which, you know, I could care less. I could have 10 followers. I'm still going to post the same amount. I could have 100,000 followers. I'm going to post the same amount, you know, but the stuff that I'm posting is something true and dear to my heart. You know, Boondockers was never about becoming famous and being the next, you know, big name in the industry. It was just a group of guys that were out having a good time and just enjoying it. So then I started posting, and actually Phil Wybar was the one that got me onto Instagram years ago. It was like, hey, you need to do Instagram. I was like, I don't even know what Instagram was. And so I never really cared. Like, I would post here and there. And then as I've gotten older, Instagram is just where it's at, because I like the people that I follow and the people that follow me. So, and then, you know, obviously products, and then Facebook is more my dad's family or my stepmother or my mom's family, you know, so on and so forth. But I understand what you're saying, and you're right. You know, I should post more. I've been asked to post more, but sometimes, you know, it's repetitive content and it's so boring. So I just try and post stuff, you know, that's more real. I'm not great. I mean, I'm not the amazing star that some of these other guys. I'm getting old, man, and I can feel it. So I try and post stuff that's, you know, true and dear to my heart, that people are like, oh, hey, look at, he's getting stuck, or he tried that and failed, you know, so on and so forth.
Oh yeah. Talking about that one video. This video was so good. Where is that video at? You know exactly what backwards. I'm talking about.
That one right there on the left, the guy that flipped over backwards.
No, that was interesting. We can talk about that in just a sec. No, it was the one where you were humping the crap out of your sled.
Oh, that's so old. That was Matt Entz. Did I post that one?
You did. You posted it recently. I found it today and I was like, oh my God, I think
that was not meant to be. That had nothing, like, no innuendos, nothing. Like, it was just like, I didn't want to get stuck. It was a cold day. It was me, Dan, and Matt. I think it's farther down, Stud. I think
it must be because I don't see it. Oh, right here. There's this
right
one.
There.
Yeah, that one was so funny. You're like, how to get unstuck by Smasher? And you're like, you just freaking
just go.
Railed it.
I was trying to get it to go. It was an assault. Matt was behind me. It was cold, and Dan was like, "Do one more run." He was like, "Go do one more run," and I was like, "Okay." So we went up there, and Matt was like, "Go!" And I started to get stuck, and I was like, "I don't have the energy to do this anymore." So I was just pushing on it, and it got out. Like, I don't know how. Like the snow god just helped me out, and it was a miserable ride out. It took me, Matt and Dan climbed right up out of this hole, and it took me 4 or 5 times to get out of there with that old assault track on that 2011, and throttle was sticking on the way back to the truck. It was so cold. It was like, it was deep. It was so deep that day. But yeah, that was like complete accident that Matt had on his GoPro.
Yeah, that was a funny video. I was like, that's a good one. Let's see.
I think that was like the few times that we posted it. So I don't think it got as many views as before, but
yeah, 2000 on that one.
Yeah, there was, I think Nick Reedy posted or Dan posted it years ago, and it blew up pretty good the first time.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like videos like that. And this ties into what we're talking about. Like, videos like that kind of show the character of the person that you don't get to necessarily see inside the films. Yes. Like, you do get to see the cuts and the edits and like the cool content inside of a Boondocker film, but you don't necessarily get to see these goofy things that people actually do. So you end up putting individuals like yourself on a pedestal. It's like, oh, Chris, like this amazing sledder. He's the next level. Like you do that. Aaron Case was kind of like that too, talking to him about it. And he's like, it was so crazy when I had a fan come up to me and say, I know you, I watch your films, I want to be just like you. And it's just so surreal for you guys. But there's so many people that put guys on, or that are filmed on pedestals. They really do.
And you got to keep it in perspective, man. We're just people, you know, we're just people. And I think sometimes, you know, as individuals, you get caught up in the celebrity status of it, but you got to just remember, you know, there's some people that ride, you know, 4,000 miles a year, where I'm lucky if I get 1,000 miles. But if I rode 4,000 miles a year, holy cow, I couldn't even imagine, you know, if I didn't have a real job and kids and coaching. But, you know, I picked my life, and I'm happy with where I went. But, you know, I watch riders out there. Caleb is a phenomenal rider. I mean, look at where that kid's gone, you know, and the way that his body is built up, and, you know, Keith Curtis, and, you know, what Matt Entz is doing. You know, there's people that I look up to in the industry, and I'm never going to be that now. You know, it's too far along in my life. My body is beat to a bloody pulp. I mean, I'm just happy to be able to ride a sled and, you know, good out there, and people are still wanting to ride with me or film me. I mean, I'm happy with that.
Right. Right. It's this podcast has been a lot of fun with you, Chris, to sit down and chat with you, kind of see where things are at with your life again, get some perspectives once again. And even to kind of to end to your point that you made earlier about the followers, like, yeah, you may have 80,000 followers, but you only may have 800 that are actually true believers in you versus somebody that may have 10,000 followers, but 8,000 are true believers in that person.
Correct.
And that's the difference, right? You're not going out to make content because you want to really throw out things to show that you're a sponsored person, but you're making content because you're using a product that actually aids you in, or not aids you, but you wouldn't ride your sled without it. You will not do that. And so you make content and give back to those guys that provide that value to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, not to take away, I mean, there's some amazing riders out there that, you know, I mean, Keith Curtis, look at that guy, man. Whew. Holy cow.
They're like, talented guys.
He's like the Michael Jordan in the industry. I mean, the guy just, you know, kills it. I'm proud to know him. I mean, what a great guy. I mean, he's been just, I don't know him like real well, but the times I've hung out with him, what a great man. Like, solid individual. Matt Entz is another one. You know, Matt's been a great guy and it's someone I look up to. So yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I got to tell you that going to Alaska has opened up two doors. One of them I told you about. The second one, we'll have to wait. But this is a bucket list item that I've been wanting for my whole life. And the door is wide open. And it looks like it's 100% go. But when it happens, you'll know. And this is something that I've dreamed about. I think this was my whole goal. And now it's coming to reality. And I am beyond excited. So when it happens, I'll text you. And you'll see it on social media when I announce it. But I'm super pumped for this. This is gonna be amazing. I'm super pumped. Like, I can't wait. Like, it's killing me. I want to tell the world right now, because this is my bucket list, and it's gonna happen. And it's about time. Like, I have put in so much time and effort, and to have somebody call me, you know, I'm gonna just say somebody, and propose me, and me not to turn down this opportunity. Oh, it's a go. It's
yeah,
a go.
Yeah. Is it Paul Thacker saying, "Hey dude, come up and learn how to do a backflip"?
it's big, man. I've been waiting my whole life for this. So you'll be one of the first to know, I promise you.
Dude, I appreciate that. Dude, this has been fun. This has been a lot of fun to catch up with you, Chris. See where things have been at. I know it's only been 6 months, but it feels like it's been forever, but that's really? Just because of the snow season, just how it is. But, you know, guess what? We got, let's see, it's
Heydays.
We got Heydays coming up in 4 months, 5 months. Yeah,
it's close, man.
Yeah. Yep. And then I really hope that as things have kind of moved in my life, I'm really, really hoping that I can make it out to the Salt Lake Expo and hang out, go to Brewies, enjoy the premiere again, spend time with you guys for the weekend. Just to enjoy it.
Yeah, let me know. And I'll see you at Heydays, right?
Planning on it.
Okay.
Planning on it.
Yeah. I'm hoping that I can make my announcement kind of around Heydays, but
dang, that's far away.
I know, but it's,
are you going to be able to keep it that quiet that long?
I've told my wife, I've told two other people, I think my dad.
No, you're starting to forget who you've told. You better be careful.
And maybe a guy at work, but you know, they're nobody, you know, so they're not going to know.
He doesn't even have a social media account.
No, he's real quiet, but I've told the people that are really close to me, no offense, but yeah, this is when it happened. Like, when the phone call came in, I was pointing at the phone and telling my wife, it's happening. Like, it is happening.
Dude, it's just like that time that Dan called you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's just like that. I mean, for the girl to call me and ask me to come to Nome, and then this guy to call me, and I knew it was kind of in the works. Like, I had been talking to such and such people about it, you know, and thought, oh, this is just a, you know, I'm not going to think anything of it. And then to get that call as soon as I got back from Alaska, and he was like, we want you. I was like, oh, that's what I'm that, like, that, it's coming together. So the people at Dillingham helped me get this. So yeah. You help me.
I'm stoked. You better stop while we're ahead, so you don't spill the beans.
You got it, my friend.
All right, man. This has been so much fun. Let's catch up again, maybe here in a few months, see where things are at. Actually, maybe we'll have to wait till after your cool adventure and see how things went, catch up and see what else we can extract from you.
You got it, my friend. I appreciate your time very much, Colton. I really do, man.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, dude. Talk to you soon.
All right. Later, brother.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you found value on this episode, be sure to share the vibes and subscribe, drop a review, and rate the podcast. If you want to further your knowledge on how we're helping people like you spend more time riding, be sure to head over to theactionsportspodcast.com and request an invite to join the fastest growing club in action sports. And come join the Action Sports Army by following us on all social media channels. Find us at The Action Sports Club. And thank you again for being a listener of the Action Sports Podcast.